Welcome to Marc Clausel.
Thank you, Verena. Very happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me today.
Very excited to have you joining this new podcast series, or not so new anymore, around the quandary, what I call the quandary in healthcare, and ways that we can find to heal the broken balance between innovation and affordability that we have in healthcare, and finding ways to strengthen the interconnectivity between the main decision makers, which I call and refer to the 5Ps, so patients, providers, meaning physicians and pharmacists and others, and the pharmaceutical industry, and the broader life science and med tech industry as well, and digital entrepreneurs in this case, and the fourth one being the payer, and the fifth, the policymaker. So how can we find ways in some to build bridges between the public and the private sectors? That's really what we're here to discuss. And I think Thomas is very well positioned because he has been and is working very much at that intersection between public and private all the time, every day, maybe. And he's going to tell us a little bit more. He is an MD by training, so we share the same primary profession, being an internist hematologist. And Thomas has been also a clinical assistant professor at Henri Mondor Hospital in Créteil, Paris, in France, and has done many stays both in the US and in Europe across the Atlantic in the past and still today. And so today he is the CEO and founder of Oaken, who has the mission to use federated learning to accelerate medical research using artificial intelligence and other modes of digitization to bridge research, medicine, and the business. So with this, Thomas, maybe my first question to kick us off, what does value in healthcare mean to you? And maybe you want to link it to what some of the main barriers and obstacles you're seeing right now to generate that value, either in personal experience or in your work experience.
Yeah, thank you, Verena, for the question. I really try to see the value in healthcare as a breakthrough. To me, like, bringing value is bringing breakthrough. There's a lot of incremental changes that the medtech is bringing in terms of little changes. But what is needed today, especially in oncology, where Oaken stands, is breakthrough. It's things that, you know, have to be validated in clinical or biology workflow, but just brings a very important knowledge that we are completely missing to actually improve how we actually treat and develop drugs in the disease. This is really where I think today things are needed. And I see really this breakthrough and non-incremental. And breakthrough can be a new model of prediction of response to therapy, a new multi-biomarker that can really help stratifying patients differently and understanding what are the high-value subgroups of patients within a disease. These type of things. I see breakthrough value as breakthrough, and this is really my definition.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point also to kick us off. So, so what do you see right now, either standing in the way to these breakthroughs, or where do you see ways to generate more of these breakthroughs?
Yeah. I would say the first is I would say two words: trust and collaboration. Especially in the medtech space, you know that people are, the first is trust on data. You know that data is really important to discover things, especially patient data, according to us. And if you apply medtech technologies on patient data, you might find a lot of new biomarkers, mechanisms, and breakthrough. The first is really trust with the physicians, trust at different levels. First, trust on the data. You know, today, there is a data economy in the US, not in Europe, which means people are selling data, hospitals, to providers. They are providers, sorry, to payers or the pharma industry. But the question is really, is this okay? So today people are saying it is okay because we are anonymizing data sets. And we have to say the truth. Data sets cannot be pseudo-anonymized or anonymized fully. There is always a way to come back to the identity of patients. Because whenever you have genomic data, and in oncology, you always have genomic data, pretty much, you can always cross-fertilize this with some genealogy database that were public and find some, you know, people in the family. So at the end today, we have to be clear, data cannot be anonymized. Therefore, is it okay to have data aggregation and data economy? Yes, probably, but there has to be other alternative where data stays in the hospitals, where patients are better informed about what the data are used for, and where, like, actually patients can opt off different programs of research very clearly. And I think that the technology we're building today, federated learning, is a technology that enables insights and breakthrough to be done on-premise within the firewalls without having the data to leave the hospitals. So it's really an alternative to that aggregation. It's not going to replace it, but I think it gives a lot of trust. And we have a project today called Melody, where 10 large pharma are sharing intelligence and insights on drug discovery without sharing the data set themselves. This is new, sharing intelligence on molecular libraries, something they would never share. So I think like the trust is, we need technologies to build trust. That's the first one. And the second is just become a surrogate marker of trust is collaboration. We need to have more collaboration and open innovation. Pharma can work together if they trust that data won't be shared or kept anywhere else. If they can keep the data, sky is the limit to build collaboration on unmet medical needs. We need to be able to share clinical trials, insights on glioblastoma if we want things to finally work out, on Alzheimer's disease, on all this unmet lupus, asthma. No one understands asthma and what the subgroup of patients are. So yeah, I mean, for us, I see innovation and collaboration coming from these notions of trust, really.
Yeah, and I think it recalls me something I've read recently, basically that how can we generate more breakthrough is through, as you say, trust and collaboration. And the reverse would be that silo mentality and silo working is actually a barrier to innovation. And is it a barrier.
The main barrier to innovation, really. I mean, really.
Yeah, and I think you're explaining it very nicely, but what is even more so impressive that with your current company, you're actually making it a reality. You're actually bringing these players together between academia, hospitals, and then you as a private company, federating this in your mission statement, federated learning, to build these bridges between the players and actually make it happen. Do you have a couple of examples you want to share where this is actually hitting the reality for patients?
Yeah, exactly. As you say very well, Verena, so first we are trying to bring these two P together, right? Private and public. So we have this Melody project, 10 large pharma, among the largest pharma in the world, sharing insights without sharing the data on drug discovery and having some collective intelligence to actually make models that can predict binding of molecules in a better way. First in the world, pharma collaborating on their molecular libraries. This is really super exciting. Every single pharma is really trying to join the consortium today. It's a European granted project. Very proud of that. The second one is called Health Chain. Four large hospitals in France, including Nantes and APHP Paris and others, are really like collaborating around melanoma and trying to understand response to BRAF inhibitors and immunotherapy. Really using this federated network. This is just two examples among others. We had a partnership with KCL and NVIDIA around neurotumors. So what we were speaking about before. I mean, really like topics, trying to find unmet medical needs. You know, there is no curative treatment for glioblastoma, for metastatic melanoma. Very interested trying to understand the mechanism of it, sharing insights. And of course, it's still complicated to create this consortium because people need to agree on and everything, but.
So I have a question to that. Exactly. So I was curious, so A, congratulations to, and I know you do many more projects, so you're very humble to just cite two for now, but what's your secret sauce to bring those people together to agree to A, kickstart Melody and Health Chain, and B, to acquire new members and join? What is your secret sauce? So you're saying creating trust, but how do you do that? How do you bring those, because it's people behind, right? It is individual human beings. How do you do it in real life? Like so next
really
Monday, what
more
do
than
you do?
Starting Melody, I mean, like first it's really about like, in the orchestration of Melody, it's really about first finding a question that excites everyone, right? Finding a question around augmentation. That's an important distinction. You know, in AI, you can do acceleration, go faster on diagnosis, and you can do augmentation, trying to do something that is new, prediction of response to immunotherapy. It's not something you can't do as a physician, for example, or a researcher. So it's really bringing like kind of superpowers. So find an interesting question that matters for most people. And I think this is always the first step in med tech. That's very important. And then, trying to have some technology stack that is easy to use, that everyone can understand, and also just don't cut any corner, because just like have all the auditing of the technology that is needed to give trust to everyone. add some important like technology layers that can give more trust, like blockchain. Now, blockchain can protect data, can know, you know, just helping having more traceability, and just, you know, like never cut any corner, really, like bringing all the technologies that is needed. And it's not make it work, it's really make it work perfectly well, because like it's very sensitive data, and you don't want to be in the first page of the New York Times because there was data leaks or whatever. So you need to be super stringent on the technology and be very trying to reach a certain degree of perfection.
Awesome. I think I took note of really your ingoing question is so important, and it has to excite people, and you need to create that enthusiasm with people, how it can help them to do something they couldn't do alone.
Yeah.
And that really would augment and not accelerate, as you describe. And then second, don't cut corners. And it almost is for one rare situation in life where perfect is better than done, because you may know this saying, done is better than perfect.
But usually,
exactly. Yeah, very nice. Always an exception to every rule, right? So great. No, those are great points. Did you want to, because I know you guys are also working on things that are directly tangible to patients. So you've worked like on for mesothelioma, for example, and breast cancer. Do you want to share a little bit what you're doing there?
Yeah, I mean, mesothelioma was the same. So our idea is really trying to attack like unmet medical needs, especially in cancer, where we can really make breakthroughs that will matter for drug development, commercialization, and even discovery now. So we like impacts. So we took one cancer that is an unmet medical need completely, which is mesothelioma. Mesothelioma was really like a without curative treatment. And so we try to take a hard question: is can we understand if there is new value, high-value subgroups of patients that can be of interest? Because people don't really understand how they classify very well. So there is a classification, an histological classification, but that could be improved. And so the question was really about trying to understand. Trying to understand like really like what can we do as a first question. So the first question was really about trying to predict survival. We took a hard question: can we predict survival of patients? They all have the same chemotherapy, so. So it doesn't really matter. And so we try to predict this question, and we use pathology baseline. We use like baseline pathology, and we really decided that can we try to predict survival using baseline pathology, biopsy, without any screening. Yeah. Actually, worked out very well using our technology. And then we tried to understand how this could work. Why was this working that well? And the answer was really about like, we could make it work, but we could make it work. We could understand the biology behind it. We always try to first make a prediction, then try to reverse engineer the model, try to understand what's the biology here. And the biology was the stroma. We could dictate, we could actually discover that the stroma was important for the prediction. And we make the back and forth with our community of clinicians in the mesothelioma space. And we could validate this hypothesis that stroma really can predict really well.
It's almost, it reminds me, it's almost principles of design thinking. You prototype something, then you test, you take the insight, and then you evolve your model, right? In terms of.
Exactly, but you also try to integrate expert knowledge. What is very important in AI today, AI is still correlation, non-linear correlation to correlation. And we really just like really can have this like we need expert knowledge to be confront the results and have people like look at your results and try to give interpretability and explanation. And it's that's really, back, very, very important. Yeah.
It's going back to your surrogate of collaboration that you said. Yeah, very interesting. And I don't know if you have also the opportunity to explain a little bit around the breast cancer model. I was intrigued when I was reading this that you said, you know, you have your baseline pathology samples and histology slides that, you know, the pathologist looks under the microscope. But then sometimes you also have molecular material like blood and DNA and RNA. But what I heard or understood when I read your paper is that you can maybe make and help predictions in the clinical work when not all those samples are available. So you, I think with the HER2 knew there was a model. Maybe you can explain that a little bit. And we don't want to bore the audience too much with technical details, but maybe you can find a simple way to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same for breast, for anything. It's trying to really understand like triple negative breast cancer, you know, like as it's a cancer that is defined by the fact that it's not negative three times, but we don't know what it is really. And so trying to predict response to different therapies
is always the way to actually discover high value subgroups. And we're not only using pathology, we are using multimodal, genomics, pathology, a CT scan, clinical features. And I think this is an important message for people that are interested in AI, is we think the future of AI is horizontal. You know, today, AI are very vertical. People are creating company for radiology, for bones, or like people are creating like, image of the eyes for diabetes, but people are very vertical. But if you want to capture the reality of a disease, you need to be more horizontal and try to capture different types of biomarkers. And we are at Okin, we believe that trying to connect genomics with pathology, with CT scan, with images and clinical work can really give you a set of different biomarkers that can be way more closer from the ground truth and the biology, and also can give you more statistical power to have something relevant. So we are really completely horizontal in the way we see that, and same for breast, right? There is some images, yeah. There is some genomics and everything. So breast cancer is a very interesting topic to we can discuss.
Yeah, and so that's the power of technology, because you can combine different almost channels of input, right? Radiology, really? Pictures, clinical, and genomics and histology, which as a human being alone, you know, it's too much work and too much volume of data that we
but you can't also single. it's not too much volume, it's just you can't, right? You can today a pathologist can have a lot of like diagnostic power, but without being enabled by AI he cannot actually predict the survival or a prediction of
response. And it's different professions, isn't it? A pathologist is a profession, a radiologist is a profession, and a clinician is a profession.
But we need them to help us understanding we need them to work with them to understand. Yes. Today, the only way to make biology go forward with AI is mixing expert knowledge in pathology, clinical work, and with some models and trying to really interact. And we are building actually an amazing tool that is called Studio at Okin, that is an interaction tool to make programs together between data scientists and researchers. And researchers such as physician researchers. We need to learn how to work together, and connecting everything is also connecting data scientists to physicians. And you know, I think like today physicians don't have a lot of trust in AI, so we need to show them that it can really go towards interest in biology, but they need to be part of it. And I think like really the augmentation part of AI, giving superpowers, making prediction, trying to discover new biomarkers is more exciting than the acceleration phase of just making diagnostics cheaper or quicker.
Yeah. Great. I mean, this is almost a very nice concluding statement. Yeah. You said it all in one sentence. So I'm not going to ask you my general question around how do you see the potential and the power of the fourth industrial revolution, because that's all what you do and that's all what you talked about. So maybe to finish us off, any other thoughts and recommendations or wish you'd like to share here on the platform around value in healthcare?
I think like what's very interesting about the 5P is what's the role of payers, for example, in the AI space. So you know, in the diagnostics, I'm trying to advertise augmentation and research more than diagnosis in a way. But diagnosis is also of course very important using AI. And the question is, will payers pay? I mean, today, what's limiting a big part of the creation of startups and it's just the fact that payers are not paying for AI enabled diagnosis. However, it's of great value. So I think like how the payers are seeing the value of diagnostics enabled, with AI, I think it's a very important fact. And the second fact I think is very important is really like, I think like trying to understand what's in the pharma industry, how much they want to connect through external innovation or internal innovation, and what's the real relationship in the future will be with companies like us that have also a different culture, I think like we with the pharma industry and the public is very important, and there's always a bit of cultural clash between AI companies and this world, but I think it's getting better. It's important.
Very nice. Culture matters. Yeah. No, great points. And I took note, and the next time I have representatives from these areas, I'll make great. Sure to hand over those questions and let you know. Thank you so much, Thomas.
Thank you very much.